Tom Akron, Ohio. This is episode 149 of On the Tropes. On this week's episode, we're going to keep talking 2010.
Wow.
Yep. Rolling it back.
2010. Tropies. Back when the On the Tropes podcast was just a glimmer in our eyes.
I feel like I didn't even know what podcasts were in 2010.
2010 was the Hurt Locker.
The country is wrapped up in Avatar fever.
Yeah.
Avatar.
Is that still like the highest grossing film ever?
We just learned about the wonders of a young Michael Fassbender.
Mm. Quentin Tarantino released his best movie.
Yeah. We're talking about the same movie, right?
Yeah.
Inglourious Basterds. Yep.
Mm-hmm. I don't think so.
Maybe Pulp Fiction.
I'm still Pulp Fiction. I think Jackie Brown or Inglourious Basterds is the best.
I need to revisit Jackie Brown.
Don't forget the creme.
I feel like
best performance, sure, but that's more.
Yeah, I kind of want to talk about Tarantino a little bit more. So I'm like, should we go ahead and
best performance? Are we talking about? Are we talking about Eli Roth?
Knock it out of the park.
Sir totally changed my opinion on that, and I think you're absolutely right. So on the surface, yeah, it's terrible acting, but it's terrible acting because the character is trying to act tough.
Yeah, he's a real person. Yeah. That's what makes it a great moment.
You're absolutely right.
I just don't like Eli Roth. There's just something about him.
His xenophobic movies.
I don't know that I want to see him act again or direct again. However, I think that's a great performance.
I just don't like his biceps. Stupid pretty man.
Anyways, have we said our names? I'm Nick.
I'm Sir.
I'm Thema.
I'm Kyle.
All right, so we talked about this real briefly before you got here. I'm pumped about the idea of a possible Tarantino Star Trek.
I'm so pumped. And so Jonathan Franks, I saw the clickbait.
Tell me it's going to be TNG.
It might be TNG.
I
know what you're talking about.
Here's the thing, though.
The Next Generation.
If it's because he's
Jonathan Frakes didn't say any involvement. He said he was wondering what it was about. However, there's some other things that point that it might be a TNG movie.
If it's TNG and they bring back the original cast,
oh my god,
I'm getting goosebumps talking about it. Like that's where I cut my teeth on Star Trek. Like
that's what I grew up with.
So close to my heart.
Every weekend, me and my family were sitting around watching The Next Generation. Like it was a big institution in the LeBaron family.
I would hope for games. I would hope for Indians to be rained out because they would just play TNG marathons. I would hope for that. Oh my god!
You guys.
Well, let's hope the Indians get rained out anyway until they change their damn name.
At least the logo.
Oh, nice, nice.
The logo's
going hard in 2018 over that.
The logo's going this year, I think.
Yeah, I think you're
right.
Wasn't
it supposed to go, like, years ago?
Who's Jonathan Frakes?
So, Jonathan Frakes is Frakes. Riker of the gross Riker chair step. He does this thing.
Yes, he does.
Lower body over a chair over it. It's this gross jock. Toxic bullshit that he does.
Yeah, it's like alpha male bullshit. But besides that,
he was kind of like the Kirk of the TNG. So he was like the ladies' man of the Next Generation.
Who's Kirk?
I think you're right though that a Tarantino Star Trek is the most bananas and exciting and ridiculous movie I can think of that he would be involved.
He hasn't done sci-fi yet, has he?
No, not even slightly.
He's always kind of had a foot in, like the hyper real. So like, not quite fantasy, but we're almost there, kind of thing. Like with the mythology behind Kill Bill.
And
even Pulp Fiction. Like, there's the question of, is there a soul in the box and in the briefcase?
He's well versed in genre filmmaking. This is just a different genre that I'm sure he's pretty familiar with.
And it's one he hasn't talked about a lot, though. And that's what's really interesting to me about it. Is this isn't something where we go, oh, Tarantino's talking about making a Western. We kind of know what it's going to look like already because of what he likes. I'm excited about this because I don't know what
like special effects and
Tarantino
stuff.
Watches.
Be crazy.
I didn't realize he was such a big Star Trek fan.
I'm super excited to see that because, again, something we haven't seen from him.
Right.
And I would love to see that.
For sure. Yeah. Especially after, you know, he's done like kind of a Western and then kind of a Western. Like, I don't need to see another Western by Tarantino.
Yeah.
Like,
and he's
good.
Unless it's a space Western.
Which this might.
Oh, my God. And if you could imagine like bringing back that because that.
You know what he should do instead of the original cast?
See a aging Data.
Thank you.
An aged Data. I would love to see like these guys who because here's the thing is that the actors are all older. Like, Will Wheaton's matured. The main cast is now, instead of being in their 20s and 30s, they're in their 50s and 60s. And it would be like, Wrath of Khan, where it'd be, because you know he's not just going to do something on the surface. It's going to be something, you know, he's going to address issues, and I would hope so, anyhow.
He's going to reference the,
yeah,
the mythology.
I'd like to see him cast this with the original cast of Firefly.
Yeah. That would just, that would make it so much better than if it was just the old cast.
Yep. Kyle.
I don't want to get involved in this.
Kyle, what's your trophy number four?
My fourth award goes to Best Game, and that goes to Persona 5, which was a game that I got completely absorbed with for a few weeks.
Is that the sequel to the Ingmar Bergman film Persona?
Maybe. I've also talked about this on our show before, but it's like a high school simulator slash dungeon crawling turn-based RPG where you basically live the life of this student, and it's just one of these games where you put a lot of time into it without even thinking about it. And it might be a little too long, but it was just a game that I thought about all the time when I wasn't playing it, and really good characters, really good writing. And, yeah, it's just a game I got completely absorbed into, so. Persona 5. Best game. Emo, what's your next award?
Best dramedy. And this might be actually my favorite movie of the year. But, I'm not a contemporary guy. I've seen, like, maybe four 2017 movies. I don't know. But definitely best dramedy. And this goes to The Big Sick. Kumail Nanjiani. Stars, and it's a real life retelling of what he and his now wife went through before they were together, and she was quite ill. But it addresses multiple things. The reason I love it so much is that it really does capture what it's like to be in a medical setting during a crisis. And to see how that plays off of family dynamics, and how it's not just a steady stream of one emotion. It's like, I've said this before in the podcast, but in real life, it's not just dramedy, it's not just comedy, it's not just horror. Like, all these, there are moments of everything kind of interspersed, and this does a great job of breaking genres. And merging them, and it tells a very, very human story. Real heavy laughs, real sad moments, but all in all, just a wonderful film. And it does a really good job of what I think it's like to be from the patient's perspective in something like that, where they're trying to decipher all these different doctors coming. I mean, they should have had a palliative care consult on board just to add to his family support. That's my opinion. I don't know if they did.
You never see the radiologist, so that's accurate.
And had my favorite laugh from the year, where Kumail's character, named Kumail, has been through hell and goes to a drive-thru and orders a cheeseburger with four slices of cheese, and the guy on the other end is refusing to do it because it's his first day on the job. And meanwhile, Kumail's dealing with this major, major life issue, and all of his anger and frustration is being taken out on the guy on the other end of the drive-thru. What do you call that? Speaker system?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's just the heaviest I've laughed. It's just this release of all this pent-up tension. So, brilliant movie. Brilliant movie. Serial number two.
So my number two award is Best Picture, and... Well, real quick, I will say that I'm going to watch The Big Sick now, because I did hear about it.
I thought it was great. It's a great date movie. It's funny. It's heartwarming. It's got sad moments. I love him in it. I've liked Kumail.
Yeah, because I really like him. And that's, I didn't know he had made a movie until like just the other day. And I was like, oh, wait.
Yeah.
It's actually, on, if you have Amazon.
Yeah, it's on Amazon.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I do.
Yeah. Yeah. It has my favorite... laugh of the year too, and it's a different scene. I won't spoil it because it's just like a one-liner, but it's so like it's such a good.
You'll have to tell me. You'll have to text me later. Yeah.
It's when Ray Romano's asking him his opinion on that.
Oh yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah,
it's just so good. Ray Romano and Holly Hunter are both like terrific in this.
She
Dabra. Dabra.
Yeah, Holly Hunter. She does some like physical things, mm-hmm. like just little.
Ew, Chris.
I know that's gonna come out wrong. Like she's embodying that character, and there's all these like subconscious things that she's doing physically that it's like, oh no, she's there, she's that, she's, yeah, I don't know, I'm not explaining it well, but
well, best picture, I wonder.
Yeah,
so yeah, it's gonna go to Get Out. Yeah.
What,
directed by Jordan Peele.
Do we officially give this the main,
well, shall we do it now? Should
no,
we
no there's an order to things, so we're waiting until happen. The end. Yeah.
What if that's how like the Oscars went, just halfway through they're like,
best picture,
you know what,
La La Land,
no, Marshall Ali's getting this award, let's just do the other part too. Yeah. that actually would have worked out better than the way they did it last year. So
yeah, I mean, as far as what it did in its own genre, what it does for black cinema, what it's doing for a new generation of creators, because now you got Kaluuya, Lakeith Stanfield is in it. I think, you know, and every single one of the actors in there is now, there's buzz behind him. It's just great. I think that, like, I like what Nick, you really pointed out, how this is going to go down in history, like when we think about the best horror films of all time, it's gonna, like, it stands there not just because it's unique, even though its uniqueness is incredible. Mm-hmm. I think what's great about it is it has so many references to the genre, like The Hidden Grandpa. Mm-hmm. And this is a friend of mine pointed these out, and she pointed out also the, like, the villain self, the congratulatory scene that, like, a lot of villains in horror movies will have.
Mm-hmm.
When the daughter is, like, eating Fruit Loops. She's got, like, the milk. And, like, also, I want to address that character real quick, because there's a lot of controversy around her where people are saying that, oh, there's a fan theory that she was, like, hypnotized, that she's, like, not complicit in it. That is, like, this is a woman who has trophies of people, mm-hmm. as photographs. And as soon as Chris is in the basement, those trophies go right back up on the wall. Like, she is, this is like serial killer type stuff. Like, mm-hmm. she's in that moment, she's like reliving these things. And then she's like, that's such a great scene. And it's stuff like that that he puts in there that he's referencing a lot of other movies. Chris is, as a character, he's basically, Jordan Peele compared him to the final girl.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just so awesome. Something Peele pointed out that's so important to realize in horror films is it's not the whole thing about the black guy dies first. That's not, we're missing the point. The real point is that the black guy and black woman and black characters in general always die in speculative fiction. We never make it to the end. So we're going to be sacrificed. And even if it's people of color, Glenn, he's going to get sacrificed in The Walking Dead. If you are like any of those characters, they usually have a shelf life, and it's mm-hmm. to show either that they have, that they can, you know, it's to elicit feelings of emotion in other characters. It's to, you know, provide you with somebody that can give a heroic sacrifice. It's all kinds of stuff. And yet it's never about those characters and their experience and them living to the end. Like, it's completely ridiculous. And that's the real thing we as writers and creatives have to address. This movie completely mm-hmm. just goes against that. And
that's part of the reason why I like the ending without giving away too much. Yeah. The ending as it's done, I think, is much better than mm-hmm. the alternate ending.
Oh, yeah.
What he was
yeah.
thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then to go back to a point you're making about the Allison Williams character, as I was watching the movie and I'm trying to piece together what's actually happening, I started to think maybe she was hypnotized. But then once everything kind of gets mm-hmm. laid out, I think to read that after the movie's over, to have that as your read of the character is to fundamentally misunderstand what this movie yeah. is about.
That's such a great point, is that it doesn't work if the whole village is hypnotized. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah. I think
logically, like,
it's very much the opposite is what the movie's
yeah.
going for. And pulls off. Like, I think the only reason you would ever come to that conclusion is you want that to be true.
Yeah, and
which is missing the point of the movie.
I think what Nick's trying to say is that if you think that Allison Williams is hypnotizing this, you probably have a White Lives Matter shirt, and you probably told a person on on Facebook that, you know, they shouldn't still be dealing with the aftermath of slavery. Mm. So, like, you, I just think that, you know, let's be real. Mm. However, yeah, that was maybe a little more shade than it needed.
I think one of my favorite, I was talking about how in the last episode, the no scene is going to be something really memorable. But that image of her holding the keys, I think, is something that has already become a part of, like, the cultural zeitgeist.
Yeah.
And my favorite example of that is when our current, hopefully not by the time
this airs,
not that anything like imminent, but I just always feel like hopefully he won't be soon.
Yeah.
When Trump pulled out of the Paris Climate Agreement, somebody posted on Twitter a quote of people saying, like, or I think it was like, quote, the world saying, babe, like, or no, like, can you get the keys? We need the keys.
Yeah.
And then Ivanka holding the keys. Sorry, babe.
Yeah. And I think, and you're pointing out something that this is why it's best picture to me, is that it's instantly iconic, classic, and it's like given us language in our culture that we're going to use for years and years. Like, black people, I mean, the sunken place for us, it has become one of the best ways to explain where that character on Continental Breakfast is and who that guy in that photo really is. Yeah. And it's like, geez, I mean, it's being referenced by academics, by people, like, it's instantly affected the culture. And to do something like that is an incredible achievement. And if the Oscars don't reward this movie, I mean, I've been against the Oscars since day one. My whole thing about the Oscars So White was, fuck the Oscars. Let's make our own award. Let's devalue this toxic environment anyway. So when Mahershala Ali got all the Oscars and people are like, oh, yeah, they're good, I'm still like, however, at this point, I'm mostly just watching to see how much they fuck up.
Yeah.
So it would be ridiculous. Like, it would be very much proof of who we think they are if they don't. So I almost think, like, maybe it will get an Oscar for that, just because they don't want to seem as racist, because it's so obvious that this movie is good.
Yeah.
That's my completely unbiased opinion.
This year more than any other years, though, I think there are going to be a lot more movies in the Oscar pool where it could win and you go, yeah, I get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I could see this winning. I could see Lady Bird winning. I go,
yeah.
Yeah. I haven't seen Call Me By Your Name yet. That's, like, probably my biggest regret. But, you know, all the critics I like seem to love it.
We're getting it late, unfortunately.
Yeah. Everybody's getting it late in the Midwest.
I'd be really surprised if it didn't at least get a
nomination.
It's got to. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, if not for Best Picture, just because of everything it laid out, it has to get a screenwriter.
Like, yeah.
Screenplay. Best original screenplay.
I say this now, but it's going to end up being, like, The Darkest Hour that wins. We know it's going to happen.
I don't know what that is.
It's just a bio, like, British biopic period piece.
About Churchill.
Yeah.
Yeah, about Churchill. Like, I'm sure it'll be a competently made, sterile film.
Right.
And it'll probably win Best Picture.
That's one of the best ways to say what usually wins. It's like, so I think that's my,
like, King's Speech too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see horror movies down the line that reference or make, like, nods to Get Out, like, take things from it, which is another sign that this movie's going to be, like, an instant classic in that genre, which is cool.
I really want to... I don't own it, but I've heard his director's commentary is amazing.
Nice. I bet.
So I love watching him talk about Get Out. Yeah. I have some quotes pulled from the New York Times article that you were referencing. Like, it was one of those things where, like, if you watch a good commentary on a movie, or if you, like, listen to a really good analysis of the movie, it makes you like it that much more. Mm-hmm. And that article is just fantastic. I forget what it was called, but it was pretty recent. Just if you look up New York Times Jordan Peele.
Like within the last month or two, or a couple months.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's an incredible article.
Nick, what's your number two award?
I'm going with Best Actress. Some honorable mentions. I talked about Robert Pattinson in the last episode. His former love interest and former co-star, Kristen Stewart, and personal shopper, definite honorable mention. She's like one of the best actresses right now. She's
personal shopper. You liked?
You didn't like it?
I didn't see it. Now, this is another thing that I'm going to have to watch now that
it's very, you were, you know, it's very, you guys have told me it's to, very akin to a ghost story in a lot of ways. Huh.
There's a pie eating scene.
She eats an entire pie.
People walked out.
It's like Ghost Story. It's like Ghost Story with less pie, more dialogue, and more texting. Like about a third of this movie is just her texting.
Oh, that sounds incredibly compelling.
Yeah, but it is. That's the thing. Kristen Stewart, great. Frances McDormand in Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. Sally Hawkins in The Shape of Water.
Who I want to see that so bad.
I don't think anyone in the world, like, I have a feeling that you will just love the crap out of this movie.
Yeah.
That's just my gut instinct. She plays a mute in this, so she doesn't even talk. And she's
I want to see it more now.
She's just so good. She's, this movie. I love it. Haley Lou Richardson, who's the co-lead in Columbus. Mm-hmm. But my number one, my homegirl, Saoirse Ronan. Is just, I think she's 22 and she's already given us two of the best performances of the last like decade in the last couple of years. This and Brooklyn, this being Lady Bird.
Yeah.
No character this year was more fully formed than Lady Bird, I don't think.
Yeah.
I don't know how you could make a character that's more fully fleshed out than that. I think like it's impossible. She's like one of the best characters.
And you know what I really like about it is it's a character that had to be created. It's like somebody like, I mean, even like Get Out is built on archetypes. So you know a lot going in about who these people are and what they're supposed to be if you know you're familiar with a lot of it. This is a movie where this is the first coming of age film of our time, of our generation, so like a lot of that imagery we know as the audience, yet we got to see, does the movie know what this character looked like? And she totally did. Like, it's perfect. She's like, there's so many beats and so many moments where you're just like, man, every one of these characters is really fresh. It's just completely fleshed out. And like her, what would we call those? Bootcut jeans?
Yeah.
At the end of the movie, like when she kind of goes to college and kind of changes her look a little bit. Like, it's just a perfect look because like you've seen that person. And it's something that that visual vocabulary hasn't been on screen yet to such a perfect, in such a great, like just well realized way. So I think, you're right that like, she's the richest character. Every one of those characters felt like they had a whole movie behind them. And yet her movie somehow managed to be better and bigger than all these other great actors.
We'll talk about a little bit more, but just in terms of her performance, like she's an Irish actress and you forget, like I forgot it halfway through and I've seen her play an Irish girl in movies before. Like I'm familiar with how she talks. I've seen her in interviews and she was on SNL this year. Like I'm familiar with what she actually sounds like, but she does the best. Like she's just like the way I imagine Greta Gerwig would be. And then what some of the other things I just really like about her performance in this character, it takes place. She's a high school senior from the year 2002 to 2003, which is how old I was. Like I was a high school senior that same year. So I'm the same age as this character was during that time.
Have you guys seen it?
No.
Like even though I'm not, I'm clearly not like a young woman, I still found it so easy to relate to this character.
When she goes out, the guy's reading People's History of the United States, when he's reading, when she goes out and, I forgot what book he was reading in this scene. She goes out and it's like a party and he's by the pool reading in the dark. And his shorts, you can see his legs showing, like in his socks. It's just these like the characters will be perfectly realized. And then they'll show you the cracks in the character that we saw at the time that like now as adults looking back, we could go, oh my God, that was completely ridiculous. Like we were completely ridiculous. And like, that kind of self-examination is exactly why we go to the movies, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, why do we read stories? It's for stuff like that. And it was just awesome.
And I'll talk about, I'll just do it now because we're already on the topic of it. I was going to save this more for like when I talk about it as my number one movie of the year. But there's all these minor characters that they give a minute or two to. And just like the priest,
The priest's great.
He's their acting coach, and they play a game called, like, the first one to cry wins. And it's just supposed to be, like, something where all the kids who are in the play try to get in touch with their emotions. And he's the one who starts crying first. And I started laughing my ass off in the theater.
Oh, wow.
And then you... Because it's so funny. Yeah. It's just like this, you know, grown man crying over nothing in front of these kids. And then there's a little moment afterwards where you learn a little bit more about mm-hmm. him. And then you see a little bit more about him for 30 seconds later in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And you know so much about this character now. And she does it so fast. And you never have to do anything else.
Yeah. Like,
most other movies would never give the final scene with that guy any thought. It wouldn't even have made it into the mm-hmm. first draft. And this one, it makes it in the final cut of the movie. And it's not just the main character. It's the whole movie. Everyone yeah. is so fully formed in this movie. Her relationship with her mother is, like, so perfect. There's a great interview with Greta Gerwig where she talks about how, like, she didn't want to do, like, she dates guys, but she doesn't want to do a movie about a love story between, like, a girl and a boy. It's more about her and her mother and how they interact. And
mm-hmm.
I think to a lesser extent, her and... her friend.
Yeah.
I forget her friend's name, but yeah. Beanie oh. Feldstein.
Well, maybe it'll come back around. I'll okay. get to make some more comments. But.
Last award.
Yeah.
Kyle.
My last award goes to, I guess the award is just the gaming trend of 2017. And I'm just going to say that it's
microtransactions
games. Yeah, I wish. No, the positive one. It's games with complex and really strong female leads. I made a list of every game that I played that came out this year, and I'm like a lot of them, and most of my favorites had you playing as a female character that wasn't Lara Croft, which was really refreshing. Aloy from Horizon Zero Dawn, 2B from Nier Automata, Mae Borowski from Night in the Woods, Alyssa from Cosmic Star Heroine, Senua from Hellblade, Chloe and Nadine from The Lost Legacy, and I didn't even play the second season of Life is Strange, but Chloe in that, I'm sure, was probably one of the best characters of the entire year. But what was great about all these characters is that none of them are perfect, and a lot of them have their issues, and they are portrayed really... differently in these games, and it's really nice to see that they're all not all like superheroes and stuff. They're like real characters that you learn about, and they're really fleshed out in their stories. And I think more so than any other year that I've been playing video games, female characters are being represented way more, which is nice to see, and at least in games. But yeah, so yeah, that was my final award. Then would be your last one.
Last one. It's going to be, I guess, best film. Was that my number two? My number two was best dramedy. That's what I want to stick to. My number one is going to be best film of the year. And this is weird because it is actually about 15 years old, but probably my favorite screening of all time was the midnight showing of The Room.
Yes.
I've never had so much fun in a theater. Spoons were flying.
So many spoons.
And it's just such a joyous experience. Definitely felt older than the general viewer, but I think a lot of people on the wings were our age.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but if you haven't seen The Room, it's the subject of the Disaster Artist book and film. And it's one of the worst films ever made. One-dimensional characters, people doing things.
Danny, shut the fucking door.
Yeah, for no reason. And then, like, doing things like entering the room and not closing the door provides so much joy. Were you born in a barn? Close the door, Danny. Yeah, and, Yeah, every time they would kiss, there'd be the om sound.
You really think you were on the older side of the crowd there?
There were a lot of, like, college-aged kids
Yeah,
there,
a lot of college-aged kids. Like, people who were probably
seeing
three years.
It for the first time?
I don't think so.
No, this was...
No, I think a lot of those people had seen it in theaters many times.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was great. Man, I think to this... I think my favorite joke was something that I never picked up on, but the character of Mark says, "What's all this about? the candles. What candles?
Yeah. The music.
What music? The sexy dress.
What sexy dress?
Yeah, yeah. It was just, if you haven't seen a midnight showing and you're a fan of The Room, I think, Nick, you made the point to our friend Ashley, like, it shouldn't be your first time seeing The Room.
Yeah, because you'll miss out on a lot of...
like, what's actually going on, allegedly, in the script. But
and you don't want to have to worry about, like, what's going on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to trick yourself into thinking that it might actually be a movie.
Yeah.
Are you suggesting people see The Room just on its own?
Yeah.
Like, with friends, but...
Yeah, I was like, ugh.
Or the riff tracks. You know, that's how I saw it.
Yeah.
This was... it was such a fun experience, and I could see, like, getting, like, addicted to going to these, because it's such, like, a fun communal thing. You're just with a bunch of strangers, and you're all enjoying...
well,
the same ridiculous thing.
Yeah. You compared it to Rocky Horror.
Yeah.
Very
much. Was that you... said it was like our generation's.
Yeah, basically, I don't know if it was me, but I'm not the first person to make that.
I wonder how many movies have this sort of like showing, you know?
That type of.
Troll 2 for sure has something like it, but I don't think it's.
With the audience participation.
With that interactive.
Yeah, because this one has. I mean, I feel awful for whoever has to clean up the theater afterwards, because no joke, there were thousands of spoons.
Well, that's why when you were like, oh, you guys should play The Room alongside The Disaster Artist.
Play this. Thousands of spoons.
I gotta clean that up.
But we would have fun, sir.
Yeah, no.
You're not thinking about us.
You're right. No, no. That's gonna get in the gears and stuff. Yeah.
I want to go back so bad. We should do.
So
we should do a Riff Tracks field trip. That's my thought.
Yeah,
not Riff Tracks. We're not Riff Tracks. We should do an OTT on the trip.
I would definitely go to one if it was all of us. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was just, it was a hoot.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever had that much just, like, fun in a theater.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly been moved in theater, certainly, you know, but just, like, it's like I'm at an amusement park. Never had that before, so. That's my number one. Sir, your number one.
So, my number one trophy award is the Best Picture for 2018. And I'm going Black Panther, directed by Ryan Coogler.
I was wondering how you were going to turn this into a Get Out thing.
No.
I was anticipating another Get Out.
No. The best picture
for 2018.
Best picture of 2018 is Black Panther, directed by Ryan Coogler.
From deep.
Yep.
Oh, you're calling.
I mean, it's already the best. Here's the thing about it. Based on the footage we've seen, based on what we know about this movie, based on the trailer, I can confidently say, beyond a shadow of a doubt, it's the very best Afrofuturist film ever made. It has more Afrofuturism in that trailer, like things that are directly, they're speculative fiction directly based on African and Black elements. There's more of that about, like, I mean, the women, there's a tradition of women warriors in Africa. So the Dora Milaje are like, I mean, that right there is a thing that we don't normally see in speculative fiction. We don't normally see characters that are based on African myths and based on African, like, tropes and just themes. So even just the trailer alone already makes this the very best Afrofuturist movie ever made. And you can't really dispute that. And it's going to gross. It's going to be one of the highest grossing movies of 2018, guaranteed, because I personally know several Black people who've already bought several tickets. And I'm not going to say that I am or am not one of these people.
Do you think?
I don't care if this movie is totally, completely underwhelming as a film. It's going to do better than any other movie like it before or since. Like, it's going to do numbers. I heard there was a 4-hour.
I was just gonna say,
yeah.
What are the odds that it's gonna be
a 4-hour cut?
There's a 4-hour cut.
That's the first cut.
And there's a campaign. And again, I won't say if I'm a part of this or not. it is demanding the eventual release of this cut. Like Ryan Coogler, Kevin Feige specifically. If you care about your life and your family, I'm not trying to say anything. I'm getting deep. This is just from Sir. Release this cut. Like, we want to see this movie. And Black people, we don't care if it's 4-8 hours. It's an event. Yeah. We'll show up.
I love seeing people's reaction to that. They're like, I'll block out a whole afternoon to see this. Like, that's so awesome.
Yeah. Like, it will happen. And I'm just saying, it's going to be the best movie of 2018. And I think that there's enough going for it already. Think we've got Chadwick Boseman, Michael B. Jordan, Lupita Nyong'o, Daniel Kaluuya. I mean, Angela Bassett, Forrest Whitaker. I'm literally naming the best black actors we have working right now. Like, how many times have we even seen this happen in just a normal movie? Like, non-superhero, not, like, just a, like a high tentpole drama doesn't usually have a cast that's this culturally important. Yeah, Black Panther's the best movie of 2018. And I'm kind of, it's not really calling it from deep as much as it just already is.
when's it coming out?
So it'll be out February 16th. And
I feel like we need to have, you need to have a segment on the show, show right around that time where you need to.
Like special episode.
Yeah. It's just going to be incredible. And
or we should just cut in you talking about this and either just end it with a ding. Or a
yeah. However, yeah, it's, I mean,
when's it dropping?
February 16th. I would be shocked.
Wow, I didn't realize it was around the corner.
Is anything bad is said about this movie? And yet, again, that's my completely unbiased opinion. Nick, what is your number one trophy?
I'm going best film of the year. I ranked all the movies this year I saw in order. Do you guys want to hear all of them?
How many did you see?
42.
Jesus Christ. Man alive.
You want me to just go down?
Oh, man.
You said you saw like four movies?
I'll rattle the middle ones off.
Ridiculousness in this episode that I'm trying to push, I can't say anything against that. Like,
all right. I'm going to go through my key misses. I haven't seen yet The Florida Project, Call Me By Your Name, Phantom Thread, Disaster Artist, BPM, The Post, Faces, Places, and Killing of a Sacred Deer.
You haven't seen Disaster Artist?
No, not yet.
Jeez.
I don't even know if it's around.
All right. I'm going to focus just real briefly on my number 42. I hated Beatrice at Dinner so much.
Oh.
This movie made me so angry. That's all.
Would it have done better if it was like Breakfast or Lunch?
Yes.
That was the issue.
My biggest problem with it was the false ending. We didn't need that. We needed the first ending we got to that movie.
That was a big part of.
Would have been a movie I really, really liked. Might have been on this list.
I hate this character. I find her like kind of insufferably whatever. She has no self-awareness. All she is self-righteous. The metaphor of the movie is not really a metaphor. It's overt and it's preaching to the choir.
Are you talking about Crash? It sounds like you're talking about Crash.
So I hated the same a lot of the same reasons that I hated Crash. And then there's one moment in the movie where I was like, I was thinking about, you know, there's 20 minutes left. I thought to myself, there's only one thing that could happen in this movie to make me like it. And it happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh my gosh, like that was, dream sequence.
Yep. I mean, I want just recut the movie.
Yep.
It's John Lithgow, right?
Yeah.
And who's the lead in it?
Selma Hayek. Mm-hmm. She's good in it.
Yeah.
And then just the way it ends itself, without spoiling it, they try to pass off this woman as being a strong character, and then she does like.
They just totally.
They
yank the whole rug out from under their whole film.
It infuriated me.
Mm-hmm.
I was infuriated for most of the movie and the ending. After they reveal that one thing to be a fantasy sequence, and then the very ending, I'm like. Fuck everything about this movie.
I'll say that I saw that with the audience most like John Lithgow. Like an audience that was mostly, you know, native mm-hmm. people like that. And when that false ending happened, the gasp that went through the theater and the reaction, it was one of the big moments of 2017 for me. And then mm-hmm. the ending was such a letdown because mm-hmm. the sigh of relief that rippled through that audience afterward was just soul crushing.
I guess that maybe would have made me like the movie a little bit. But yeah, I hated it. So that's number 42. Going on down, Little Hours, 78-52, Landline, Wonder Woman, Lego Batman, Trip to Spain, Logan, All These Sleepless Nights, the Hasan Minhaj Special, Homecoming King, Colossal Girls Trip, Atomic Blonde, I Don't Feel at Home in This World Anymore, Free Fire, Okja, Spielberg, Brawl in Cell Block 99, that's number 25, moving down from there, Logan Lucky Song to Song, My Happy Family, Dawson City Frozen Time, Meyerowitz Stories, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, Lost City of Z, Mother, Mudbound, The Big Sick, Good Time, Your Name, Rat Film, Baby Driver, and number 10, The Last Jedi. Number 9, World of Tomorrow Episode 2, The Burden of Other People's Dreams, which is the best title? The Burden of Other... No, not The Burden of Other People's Dreams. The Burden of Other People's Thoughts.
It would have been... If it was Other People's Dreams, I would have...
Like Burden of Dreams.
Yeah, yeah.
No, Burden of Other People's Thoughts, I'm sorry. Number 8, Blade Runner 2049. Number 7, The Shape of Water. Number 6, A Ghost Story, which people walked out of. Number 5, Personal Shopper. Number 4, Dunkirk. Number 3, Get Out. We've talked about it a little bit. Number 2, Columbus. We've talked about it a little bit. And number 1, Lady Bird. We've also talked about it a little bit.
I just said it real quick. I'm a little bit... I'm sad that Landline couldn't have pushed at least a little bit higher on your list. With John Turturro's best performance in the past few years.
I just... It didn't...
Jenny Slate... One of the problems with the movie is she overpowers the film. She's too funny and too charismatic for the movie. Yeah.
I liked Obvious Child so much more. But really, the only two... Like, I'm pretty selective in the movies that I see. I only didn't like those bottom two movies and everything else.
Okay.
Yeah. I liked a little bit. You know, I would... At least a 3 out of 5-star movie. Part of the thing I didn't like about...
It's a movie about cheating. And they pulled it off.
Part of what I didn't like about Landline is the other Duplass, Jay Duplass, who's in it. He was in that and Beatrice at Dinner. I just do not him as an actor. I think he's not good. And
not wrong.
Yeah. He's bad. He's bad and he should feel bad.
I'd like to say that I'm excited that I saw...
What?
Don't touch anything.
I won't. Ever again. I'm excited that I saw more 2017 movies than I realized.
I didn't realize Logan was 2017 movie.
Yeah.
I didn't see that one. I didn't see Blade Runner to my shame, but the fact that The Last Jedi is so high on your list blows my mind.
It might move up.
Seen this?
I haven't seen it, but I don't really care.
I kind of... Can we a little bit talk about it?
Without spoiling. No spoilers, but yeah.
I love that movie.
Yes.
I love that movie, and I think it's the best Star Wars movie since Empire Strikes Back.
I said that like a couple hours ago.
That might be true. I'm not going to fight you on that.
I think
that's not saying a lot, though.
Here's the thing. Star Wars The Last Jedi gives us a film that is actually about the Star Wars. That's what's incredible about it. This is, if you look at it in the context of the new,
What is going on there?
First Order is essentially like every other post-World War army where they're holding on to something they don't really understand. They're trying to recreate. These are stay-behind armies. These are kind of after-effect conflicts that you have. I love it. And it's actually treating the universe with respect. The things that happen in it are actually following things to their logical conclusion, destroying the whole thing that... We'll get into it. It's been set up that it kind of...
Certain mythologies are...
Yeah, and certain mythologies, dynasties. Those aren't things that are sustainable in a real-world franchise. They're sustainable for, like, a few films. Mm. Yet you can't have the same story about the same people. So I think it's so realistic. It treats the thing with so much respect, and it actually takes the universe seriously. It makes it interesting again. Like... I loved it.
Kyle needs to see this so we can do a full spoiler
episode. And I'll say I think one of the major things you pointed out, I agree they do, the realism aspect, but that's the exact reason why I dislike it.
Well, you know, there were certain things that they did, though, that are so archetypal, like a magic princess. We had the most magical princess I've seen since the fairy tales. She did something so incredible, and something happened that I can't believe people don't like. I'm like,
I love that.
That is I love that.
That's making it a space fantasy again.
Yeah, totally. And I'm totally with you. It was we can get into it later, but Kyle, see the movie.
Yeah, Kyle, you see the movie.
Because I'm not just even fighting with you. I just feel fighting with you with what they did with it. I think they did it with reverence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was mostly... Kind of, we'll talk about it.
The thing I think that's so interesting about this movie is that I've seen it be people's favorite movie of the year, and then I've also seen petitions to have this movie like removed from the
canon.
The canon of
fools.
Star Wars.
Well, it's like, okay, and
it's so crazy.
You're not saying it's that bad, right?
it's like, I don't, and as far as canon goes, like, who cares? Like, you know, it's just, I don't know. If they didn't have that for the prequels, I don't see why they would have it for this. It's a great... Mm-hmm. It does a lot of great things. Yeah. I wouldn't call it a great movie.
Do you think people will keep 7, 8, and when 9 comes out, like, in its own trilogy, like the prequels, like how they work together, and they're just different?
It depends on how 9 tackles some of the things in 8, I think.
Yeah, because, like, people always view the prequel trilogy just as they were pretty bad, but they were all, like, contained in their own, like,
I think this connects to the rest of it better than...
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it does a better job in the prequels of feeling like it's in the same universe. I don't know.
Here's
I'm not gonna
on kind of just like
it'll spoil
on a macro scale, and then we'll just wait for Kyle to see it soon, and then we'll do our special episode.
Yeah.
But this is a movie about a black guy, an Asian girl, another girl, two women, and a guy who's, like, sort of white. He's actually Cuban, even though he's mostly white. He spends most of the movie, actually, even though he's a good guy and an interesting character, spends most of the movie getting shut down by women. And when he tries to be overly macho, it results in lots of people dying. But that group fighting against a white guy and an even whiter guy.
And a guy who's, like, pretty so white, he's basically gray.
Yeah.
Have you seen those theories?
I love it. Yeah. I think it's great. And I think that it's shutting down the whole white messianic savior thing that it's had going on for a while is even better.
I would point out, without spoiling, that's still happening in this movie.
Maybe it is. We don't know.
Should probably see
that's
this.
That's the thing.
Yeah,
in terms of
now we actually don't know because it's what it does.
Yeah, I would argue
a commentary on religion. Yeah, I don't think it's following that at all. I think it's giving us the exact opposite of that.
And some stuff it does about just the idea of legacy in general, I think is super interesting, which we'll get into soon.
Yeah.
Kyle.
Yeah.
You guys, The Golden Trophy 2017 is going to. I don't know. Kyle, you want to say? You can't stop talking about it.
Yeah. Man, I was trying to think of a joke, but I can't think of anything.
Lady Bird.
Yeah. Get Out.
Get Out.
That's not Columbus. Come on. Yeah, it's Get Out.
I think that, yeah.
It's Get Out. It's because it's so tropey.
Is that second year in a row we've given it to a movie?
A horror movie.
I like that. And I like
weird.
That.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
It's tropey. It's a modern fairy tale. It's a distillation of so many archetypes and ideas and incredible things that we all know and love, and it's new, fresh.
For his next
movie? And
it's
forging a new path. It's opening up a new road. And
would you want it to be a horror movie, or would you want him to do something completely
different
again?
I'm excited about everything I've heard him talk about so far. Like, I want to see him do whatever.
That's a sale.
Yeah,
I'll follow wherever he goes with that.
Yeah.
I'm just so impressed. Even with the stuff that's come out afterwards, he's been involved with, like, Black Klansman, the Lovecraft project, he's doing a lot of great stuff.
That's awesome.
And he's involved in the Twilight Zone reboot.
Yeah.
I mean, that's awesome. What I'd love to see him on the Twilight Zone. As the executive producer of that, I think we'll actually get, I mean, you guys know how much I love Rod Serling.
Yeah.
I mean, I did a sermon on Rod Serling once.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's, I think that of all the creators working right now, that's easily somebody that I would, if somebody gave me a list of top 3 people to take over for Rod Serling on the Twilight Zone and make it, like, relevant again, I'd be like, oh yeah, Jordan Peele, do it. Like, that's going to work. And he'll get a chance to do sci-fi. He'll get a chance to do, like, horror.
Especially, like, coming from the Key and Peele background where they did all these set pieces of, like, from different genres. It'd be perfect.
Yeah, it's awesome.
That's a no-brainer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this is from that a quote from that New York Times article. And I think it kind of clarifies why it's such a good, you know, not just one of the best or maybe the best movie of the year, but also one of the most tropeful and kind of like layered and interesting in a genre perspective. He says the reason for the visceral response to this movie being called a comedy, because it's the Golden Globes are tonight and it's up for best musical or comedy.
Yeah. Are you kidding?
Yeah. The reason for the visceral response to this movie being called a comedy is that we are still living in a time in which African-American cries for justice aren't being taken seriously. It's important to acknowledge that though there are funny moments, the systemic racism that the movie is about is very real. More than anything, it shows me that the film can be a force for change. At the end of the day, call Get Out horror, comedy, drama, action, or documentary, I don't care. Whatever you call it, just know it's our truth. And then another quote from him later in the piece is, one of the reasons this movie clicked so much with more than just a black audience, Peele said, is because you get to be black while you're watching it. And
I think that's
such a good description of his own. Like, he knows what he made. He understands what he made.
I've got probably one more thing to say about it. And I think in the context of everything that's happened in 2017, Get Out's so important beyond...
Well, what happened in 2017?
It's like race. It's everything about... Who do we give credibility to in this country? Do we give credibility to our idea of what a tried and true academic or authority or creative person is or powerful man? We give those people credibility in this culture, and so much of the conversation in the past few years has been about who do we believe? Do people believe me as a black person when I say that there's systemic racism? Do people believe me when I say that a little kid didn't deserve to be shot? Do people believe women when they say that they are harassed and raped and behind closed doors and people cover it up? Do we believe Asian people when they talk about how the Asian women are dealt horrible cards in film, and how, like, do we believe other people? Do we have the empathy to sit in somebody else's shoes and say, this is true, I believe you, it's just as important as if I said it happened to me? Our whole conversation has been about that in the past few years, and that's what Get Out is about. It's this movie is saying, I believe you. It's saying that this is true. It's saying, and it's giving the audience a way to experience it in such a way that they can say, oh, wow, I get this. I believe it. And I just think it's awesome. This whole year has been great. Two best movies of the year are by a black man and a white woman.
First-time directors, both.
Yeah, first-time directors, both.
My top three, first-time director, woman, first-time director, Asian guy, first-time director, black guy.
Yep. And best documentary is by a black woman, Whose Streets.
I didn't get around to seeing Whose Streets. One of my favorite, I guess my favorite documentary of the year was Rat Film, which also is like a really interesting look into race using
Baltimore,
like the rat problem in Baltimore as a metaphor.
I've heard really incredible things about it. And I'm almost like, I feel the same way about watching it as I do about, like, when somebody tells me about a horror movie. Like, I got to prepare myself to watch this thing.
We were watching it. I watched it with Nelly. And I said, what does this movie remind you of? And she said, it kind of reminds me of La Jetée. And I said, you know what?
Uh-oh.
It didn't remind me of that, but it reminded me of a different movie by the same director. And that's the best compliment I can.
Yeah, it kind of is. Listeners, you may know.
Yeah. Anyways, 2017.
Man.
Whew. Phew.
2018, hopefully socially will be better.
Yeah, hopefully. And nuclear bomb-wise, maybe it'll be better.
Yeah.
More guests.
More guests.
We should try to get some guests.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Ashley? We'll get Ashley on.
She's in San Francisco.
Actually, right, that's going to be really crazy, but did we have a guest all of 2017 at all?
I don't think so.
Man,
we'll get a guest.
Yeah, we've just been. I think this year, though, we've been curmudgeons. Man, we've really like attacked our own archetypes and like really dug deep in the things that we really care about. I think because I've been listening to. I've never really listened to the show before.
Do we have arcs? Do we have arcs in this show?
It seems like. I mean, there's been some.
I know that we have like characters, but
yeah,
I don't know that we have like a character arc.
Like, have we transformed at all?
Yeah.
And Kyle.
Do you have listener feedback?
Oh, we do, but we have to leave in a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have dinner plans.
We got skedaddle.
Our folks. So, yeah, anyways, I've been Nick.
I've been Sir.
I've been Thumma.
And Kyle.
And we've been 2017.
On the tropes.
Ooh, ooh.
Don't be a Republican.